The death penalty. That's what 12 jurors quickly and unanimously decided is the just punishment for Zahar Zinayev for his role in the Boston Marathon bombings in April 2013. The verdict appears a rejection of the defense's case that Zahar was brainwashed by his radicalized older brother Tamerlan, or the assertion he is remorseful for what he did. It's day 33, the final day in this federal death penalty trial, and this is Finish Line inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse, I'm David Boeri for WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
14 and a half hours after they began the deliberations, we get the call. There's a verdict. I'm heading into the courtroom. I stop first. I see David Brook, one of the defense attorneys for Zahar Zinayev. He has the look. He knows.
He knew.
He says to me, it's too soon for
Absolutely.
Them to be coming back.
I thought the exact same thing. There's no way that they're coming back and sentenced him to life in prison without the possibility of parole in this short of time. The only way that I would have thought that was possible is if we went into next week.
Mm. We go into the courtroom. The tension in that room, I don't know if you noticed it, before the jurors came out, all the lawyers on both sides, not talking to each other, they were silent within themselves, just looking forward at that tension.
Yeah, the courtroom for almost 20 minutes was just completely, the only sound I heard was the tapping of keyboard keys by the various journalists, and it almost sounded like rain falling on a roof. And it just lasted for a long time, and the tension built.
It's interesting, Kevin. It starts at 3:07. Madam Forewoman, do you have a verdict? Yes, we do. It runs, the reading runs to 3:30. That's 23 minutes. I thought that room was subdued, that the only emotion I really saw in that room was the jurors.
Yeah. I thought the jurors looked wrecked. There was no contact. Their eyes weren't really going on anyone.
They certainly didn't look at him coming in.
They didn't look at him, and he certainly didn't look at them. And I guess it's the cliche, the grim-faced jurors. You could tell. You knew where it was going. You could just tell, especially when they started going through the mitigating factors, and it was clear that very few jurors were buying the mitigation.
We'll talk about that in a minute. One of the jurors was rocking. Another one was drinking water, drinking copious amounts of water. They're all standing, which adds to that dramatic effect, and they are the drama, just as with the conviction. The same thing with the conviction. They are the drama. The reading is the drama. And finally, once they've announced the death penalty, they've imposed the death penalty on six counts, then you see the emotion.
Yeah.
Men and women on that jury crying.
Yeah.
Juror number one, his head down, kept on going down.
Yeah.
He looked like he was breaking up.
Yeah. And at that point, when it was clear that the word death was finally actually announced in the courtroom, I turned to my left, and directly across from me is Liz Norden, whose sons JP and Paul lost their legs. And Liz had been on record as saying she believed that the death penalty was appropriate and she hoped that he'd get it. And she was crying. And I looked two rows up ahead and I could see the profile of Bill and Denise Richard, who quite publicly said they did not want the death penalty, if only because they believed it would begin an endless cycle of appeals that would never allow their family to get back to what might be called normal. And Bill and Denise were dry-eyed, and they were just looking forward to it. So it was like, you know, Liz got what she wanted, and she was crying, and the Richards obviously did not get what they wanted, and they were very stoic.
Liz Norden said, "I have to watch my two sons put their prosthetic legs on every day." She said this afterwards. She said, "A weight is lifted."
Yeah, and I know that this was difficult for her after the Richards came out and publicly said that they were against the death penalty in this case. I think she felt like, you know, am I going to look like the bad person here believing? But she clearly believed. I remember talking to her about this in near the cafeteria. If we're going to have a death penalty, she said, and it's legal and it's there, if this guy doesn't qualify for it, then no one would. And I think what Liz Norden said is exactly the attitude of the jurors. Because you could see that this tore those jurors up. They know that they're sending someone to their death.
And that's why they all broke up afterwards, because they understood the significance of what they had just done.
They did not reach this cavalierly. They know exactly what's going on, and they know that this is something they have to live with the rest of their lives.
But the surprise here, six times the death penalty has been imposed here today, but 11 times it wasn't. And that is interesting. And I think we should talk about those because it's pretty clear that they chose for the acts involving the older brother Tamerlan with the other bomb elsewhere, closer to the finish line on Boylston Street, they were not going to impose the death penalty on the younger brother, Zahar.
Yeah. Anything that was they either believed or suspected that Tamerlan was the cause of the death, they did not impose the death penalty. So obviously the evidence was overwhelming that the bomb that killed Crystal Campbell had been placed outside Marathon Sports by Tamerlan.
Also, the murder of MIT police officer Sean Collier, we should specify here, he has been convicted of these counts.
Correct.
But involving the murder of Sean Collier, the jury did not impose the death penalty.
Yes. The only logical conclusion is that the jury believed it was Tamerlan who shot Sean Collier. That's the only conclusion I can draw from that.
Let's talk about the mitigating factors, because here is, it seems to me, is the rejection of the defense argument. In this 24-page verdict slip, the jurors are asked to register a vote on mitigating factors. How many of them agree with that the different items here are mitigating? That is, they warrant less punishment. So we have, for instance, Zahar Zanai have acted under the influence of his older brother. Number of jurors who so find, three. Only three. Another one, whether because of Tamerlan's age, size, aggressiveness, domineering personality, privileged status in the family, that Zahar Zanai was particularly susceptible to his older brother's influence. Number of jurors agree, three.
Presumably the same three.
Yeah, that his brother planned, led, and directed the Marathon bombing. Only three. So all these votes are solidly saying, no, we don't buy the argument, and they shouldn't be considered to mitigate.
And given the amount of time that the defense spent on this theory, we're now seeing that it was lost on the jury. They didn't agree with it. They just did not buy that argument.
They even get, and this one is stunning most of all because of all the time that was spent on ADX, the prison. The last argument that the defense made is, he's going to get in a hole. He'll never come out. You don't have to worry about him. It's secure. Question. Zahar Zanayev is highly unlikely to commit, incite, or facilitate any acts of violence in the future while serving a life without release sentence in federal custody. Number of jurors who so find,
one.
And lastly, the government has the power to severely restrict Zahar Zanayev's communications with the outside world. Number of jurors who so find,
two.
So they're saying, no, they don't buy that sending him to America's strictest, most severe prison is going to keep him away from the public.
I think that obviously vindicates how much time the prosecution spent on that subject. We were a bit surprised, but they knew. I think that the government was right and when they recognized if they're going to lose death, if they're not going to get death in this case, it's going to be because too many jurors buy this. And it turns out that the government was able to convince all but two jurors that that was not going to be worse than death.
So you have these jurors that agree that they're mitigating factors.
Right.
But, of course, finding that they're mitigating doesn't lead you to life in prison without parole. It indicates, we'll consider them. So the overwhelming numbers there tell me how determined this jury was to see him get the death penalty.
I think when you add all this up, Dave, and if you put it in the old-fashioned scale of justice, it isn't even close. This wasn't even close.
We knew this was an overwhelming case, at least for the state of Massachusetts. This is a very significant historical date.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the death penalty is outlawed here in Massachusetts. He could not be executed here even with this sentence. But this is also only the 80th person to be sentenced to death since the federal government got back in the business of killing people in 1988. It's rare on all those fronts.
Three have been executed. In Massachusetts, he's not the first person to get a sentence of death. However, the last person who was sentenced to death in this state had an appeal that sentence was overturned. So Zahar goes to the front of a line of two. We'll find out whether Gary Sampson is going to be sentenced to death in a coming trial. It's extraordinary for Massachusetts.
It's also extraordinary for Judy Clark. Judy Clark has the reputation of not losing, but she lost today.
And it was telling that Judy Clark's most passionate what we thought might be the most persuasive argument had nothing to do with her client, who was an unsympathetic figure, but with the idea the death penalty is not the highest calling for us. We shouldn't impose it.
This is the other weird thing here. You know, we do know that the polling is unmistakable, that the wider community here did not want this to happen. The polling numbers are actually extraordinary. It was that the Boston Globe poll showed that only 15% of Bostonians and only 20% of Massachusetts residents believed that the death penalty was the most appropriate punishment in this case. So in that respect, is the jury representative of this community? I guess not. But the other thing is, that jury sat through all this evidence.
It did sit through all the evidence. We knew, though, that anybody who was opposed to the death penalty
was not on the jury.
Was struck, automatically disqualified. Right. So it is a function of the rules. The Supreme Court has upheld this. I don't think they're going to revisit it anytime soon. So knowing that this was a death qualified jury and hearing what we had heard during some of the jury voir dire, I wasn't surprised. People said, oh, it's Massachusetts.
It'll never happen. I think that really was the why. I heard that. I kept hearing that outside, and particularly, you know, I take the commuter boat home every night from court, and people kept coming up to me, and it was universal. These are people that their lives aren't wrapped up in this that much. They all said, there's no way they're going to execute him. There's no way he'll get the death penalty. That's what I think most people in and around Boston did not believe this would happen. So I think they will be shocked, but I am not. I'm just not. I you could see it the way this thing was unfolding. I'm not shocked at all.
This brings us to the end of day 33, the end of the trial. We'll be back again on Monday for another episode to pull together all the loose ends, and there are going to be a lot of loose ends we're going to want to pull together in this story over the weekend. But for now, from the Moakley Federal Courthouse, this is Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. For WBUR, I'm David Boeri.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Finish Line, Inside the Boston Marathon Bombing Trial, is a co-production of WBUR and the Boston Globe. New episodes of the podcast will be released multiple times a week throughout the trial after court lets out for the day. You can listen at WBUR.org and at bostonglobe.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where new episodes will appear as soon as they're released. Go to the podcast section of iTunes and search Finish Line to subscribe. Thanks for listening.